Absolute truth. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, with the Absolute Philosopher talking about absolute truth. What in the world is absolute truth? Now, we have run across the concept of truth many, many times. We think we know what truth is. We think that truth is that which is true, that which is unchangeable, that which is always the same, that which we can depend upon. We think that truth is something which is accepted by everybody as being valid. We think that the truth is something that we can know. And yet, if you were to ask any person, what is truth? They would be they'd find it very difficult. They'd be hard put. They'd find it difficult to come up with an answer of what is truth. Why would they come up with an answer that it's difficult to find why and what is truth? Because truth has been so described to us in many ways as to be what your mother thinks is truth for you. What is the best for you? Truth and best are often equated. Your teachers think, now, what is the correct answer? What is the true answer to this question? And, of course, the true answer to the question might be several things, depending upon what is the meaning of the question. The question might be, have you been a good boy? Now, what is the truth about that? Now, in your mind, you may think you have been a good boy. In your attitude, you may sincerely, and I mean really sincerely, think that you are a good person, that you are a person of substance, a person whose word is meaningful, is your bond. And when you say something, it is true. When you say something, you stand behind it. You don't wiggle-waggle about it because somebody comes along with a better definition. You just stand right behind what you believe, and you call that truth. However, your neighbor might stand behind a totally different aspect of that. He might stand behind a totally different aspect of what one might consider truth. Now you say, I always tell my father the truth. If my father asks a question, I always tell him the truth. I always stand behind whatever is the truth. And my father respects that, and he knows that I will not lie. He knows that I will always tell the truth as to my best ability. Oh, now we come to best ability. My best ability to tell the truth. Well, what happened? And then you describe what happened, and then your friend describes what happened, and it's something quite different. Now, why is it that you can have two descriptions of one incident? Because you have two people looking at it who have backgrounds in different ways, who have foregrounds in different ways, and who have vantage points in different way of looking at what happened, at what the circumstances were. And they very well could come up with two opposing attitudes, absolutely divergent from each other. One might be that Johnny hit Paul, and the other might be that Paul hit Johnny. And it's not a matter of whether it is true or not. It's a matter of how did it happen. So you see it from one side, and you weren't looking when Johnny hit Paul, but you looked when Paul hit Johnny. And the other one didn't look when Johnny hit Paul. He looked when Paul hit Johnny, or Johnny hit Paul, or whatever the situation was in the opposite way. Now, was it true? And from your point of view, and from your observation, and from your awareness, and from your alertness, it was true. I oftentimes speak at the table with all of our monks, and as I talk to them, I say something that's very significant, and they may be off wool gathering somewhere, and that happens now and then I'll ask them a question about what I asked, and I'll say, did you understand what I just said? And they say, yes. And I say, well, what did I just say? And so, amazingly, most of the time, they can say exactly what I said. How they do it, I'll never know. Yes, I will. They had that inner divinity that they trusted and listened to, and then they revealed what the inner divinity said. Now, what happens when we go wool gathering. Oftentimes, as we are thinking of other thoughts, or we are mentally in another location, we are not aware of what's going on. And this happens so often, because, again, we're at the table, we're eating, and as we're eating, we are eating as a group. We are eating as a friendly group. We talk with each other and share with each other. And so I reach to the Lazy Susan on the middle of the table, and I reach for the butter. And so someone else reaches out at the same moment and wants to spin the Lazy Susan to get something to their side of the table. And I say, hey, just a minute. They hadn't even noticed that I was reaching for the butter. They hadn't even noticed that I was reaching out to the Lazy Susan, too. Now, you see, what is the truth? Did they see me or did they not see me? Did they want to see me or did they not want to see me? You see, as long as we're dealing on the human level, there cannot be an absolute truth. There cannot be an absolute truth because there can only be a relative truth relative to the circumstances that are involved. Absolute truth, more likely, is an is. Because an is does not change. An is remains always the same. It is, you might say, an absolute truth. We don't have the words to describe an is. We can talk about it, but we cannot describe it at the moment. That'll come. That'll come as we do what we enjoy and pay attention to these things and listen within. It'll come. It'll come very easily. But absolute truth is not on the relative level. It has no capacity to be on the relative level because it cannot have any relative aspect to it. The very idea that it's in a relative framework means that it cannot be absolute. Absolute can only be on the universal. Absolute can only be in its own individual self as an is in the allness. So when we talk about absolute truth, where can that absolute truth be understood? Why do we even bother talking about it? If we are interested in absolute, if we are interested in the allness, if we are interested in dwelling in this fantastic experience of the magic of beyond what we are presently knowing here on this planet Earth, but which applies here on planet Earth, which applies very definitely. If we are interested in knowing that, then, like the great philosophers, our mind wants to wander into that area of that genius that somehow says it is knowable. Many people say, God is not knowable, and absolute is not knowable. But God is not knowable in relative terms, because so long as God is knowable in relative terms, God is relative, and for God to be relative, it is not absolute. And for the absolute to be known in relative terms, it is not absolute. It is only a relative version of absolute. And for truth to be known in relative terms is not absolute. It is not in the allness. It is a relative term. I had asked one of our students to write a dictionary, since they were deeply involved in positive thinking. And I said to her, write this dictionary now having only positive words. You can take Webster's and just start right from the beginning there and just take only positive words, words which have no relative negative significance to them. And she started going through the dictionary and from A, and she wasn't having much luck. So then she started bouncing around in the dictionary, just opening it at random here and random there and looking and reading, and she did not find one word that did not have a relative response to it, that was did not have a relative relationship or definition to it. There was no word which stood totally positive, totally benefit, and even a positive word is relative. But she was looking for positive words. She was looking for words that had only positive definitions. And even the word positive didn't have a positive definition. It said, in effect, not negative. And of course, what is that? When we are thinking absolute truth, it's a good thing to think. It's a good way to go in our consciousness. It's a good idea to start putting into our world, thinking absolute truth. For as we think in this area, we will lift our consciousness in this area, we'll lift our attitude in this area, and we will begin acting in the area that we are lifting our attitude to. And as long as we enjoy it, as long as we are not overburdened by it, as long as we don't think that we have a responsibility to get this thing out and get this thing done, but just to do it and have fun, then it's okay. But any time it becomes a chain around our neck, it becomes a weight onto us to accomplish it, then it's not worth doing. It will not be done, because with heaviness, absolute awareness and absolute truth cannot be researched. In fact, with heaviness, the relative love, joy, peace, and harmony cannot be researched either. Only with a gentleness of heart and a playfulness of heart, because that's what the divine is. That's what the divine, the relative divine, is a playful being. The relative divine is a wonderful, playful being. And so this is how we approach absolute, how we approach absolute truth, with a relative, happy attitude. And as we do that, we will be satisfied with our understanding of absolute truth. And does anything else matter? Not at all. Think on that. It's a worthwhile thing to think about. Have a lovely day, and know that as you think, as the absolute philosopher, you'll have adventures you never dreamed possible. And there are millions of them to know right now, in the now. I love you. I love you. I love you.